From the campus of Winston-Salem State University, welcome to WSSU Future Focus. Everything Winston-Salem State University. And now your host, WSSU Chancellor Elwood Robinson.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Future Focus Now. My guest tonight is our very own Chris Paul, who needs no introduction, but I'll introduce him anyway. Chris Paul is a legendary basketball player, an NBA future Hall of Famer, no doubt about that, one of the greatest players in the history of the NBA. If you don't believe it, listen to the resume, a 10-time NBA All-Star. NBA All-Star MVP, a 4-time NBA First Team, 7-time NBA All-Defensive First Team, NBA Rookie of the Year, 4-time NBA Assist Leader, 6-time NBA Steals Leader, ACC Rookie of the Year, and he was once North Carolina's Mr. Basketball. Chris Paul will go down in history as one of the most influential and most impactful players of his generation. His extraordinary leadership has transformed the player-owner relationship in NBA. He will go down as one of the great leaders that we've had, and we have him tonight because Chris woke up one day and he was right in the middle of a huge social justice movement. He was right in the middle of a movement looking at HBCUs and how we could look at them differently. And he's been a leader in that regard. He is so much more. And we get a chance to talk about leadership. We'll talk about his work. We'll talk about what he did today on the campus of Winston-Salem State University. But first of all, let me welcome to Future Focus, the great Chris Paul. Welcome to Future Focus, Chris.
Thank you so much, Chancellor Robinson. Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate
it. We are glad to have you here. There's so much to get into, and thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know there's so many things going on with the NBA. You guys are trying to decide when the season is going to start, and I know you're right in the middle of that. But let's get to a few things before we get to the work that you're doing now. Born in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. I know your parents well. I know your mom. Please say hello to your mom. Someone told me that I ran into Robin a few weeks ago, and I walked right by her. So tell her, you know, with the mask and all that, I didn't know, Chris.
It's all good. She's somewhere around here. I'm here at our house right now.
All right. Fantastic. So thanks for that. Let's get into, because I mean, we'll get into all the things you're doing a little later, but let's set the stage for you in terms of how you grew up. And you grew up in Winston-Salem area. You know, you grew up to be an NBA star. At what point, Chris, in your development, did you know that you were going to be an NBA player? You were going to be a great player. When did that happen?
I was pretty late, to tell you the truth. I was a five-star athlete, had all these scholarships or whatnot offered to me, but I still had no clue, right? It's a lot of kids nowadays who know that they just going to college because it's basically just a pit stop to go to the NBA. For me, going to college was to get a great education, right? Yeah. And I don't know, I worked hard, like as a kid, I played football a lot. Like when I was in high school, I played varsity football and JV basketball. I used to pay attention to everything that was going on. And when Josh Howard started coming up, right? Like Winston-Salem, when Josh Howard went through and like he made it to the NBA, I'll never forget it. I remember when Josh got drafted like it was yesterday, because everybody here at home felt like they had made it too. Right. And one of my cousins, a guy named Steven Nivens, who was actually out there today, Steven and Josh are still tight. We're really tight then. And I remember being like a kid, like, man, like somebody from home, like they made it. You know what I mean? They made it. And I don't know. I just never knew. I didn't know that I really had a shot till maybe like after my freshman year in college.
Mm-hmm. Well, but one of the things, Chris, I mean, and you certainly, you're a five-star athlete, but I'm always interested in that moment in time when you say, I know I haven't. At some point, you had to be on the court and you had to say to yourself, you know, I'm the best player on this court.
And I, Chancellor, I felt like that a lot of times. And a lot of that too was because, I mean, I'm the little brother. I got an older brother, right? So I was always at Central YMCA, like growing up. I was always like playing. If my dad had a game, I was always at his game, my brother's game. I was always with my brothers and his friends. And they pick on me all the time because I was smaller, right? And I played 2 years of JV basketball. So the David Lash tournament, I don't know if it's still called the David Lash, but it was a high school tournament here in the city. I always wanted to play in the Frank Spencer, but I knew I had to work my way up to the Frank Spencer. But anytime I played with a chip on my shoulder. You know what I mean? I don't care who it was. I played in church leagues. Me and my brother was laughing about it the other day. My brother's talking online, whatever. We used to, Cleveland Avenue Baptist Church used to have a church league. And I used to go over there and hoop in that. I used to be at Center Grove. Anytime somebody was hooping, I was there. You know what I mean? So all of that grind, and I was talking to some of the students about it today, is that I think a lot of times people see you in the moment today and they just think that you woke up and you was nice.
Right.
Right. But no, it's a lot of sweat equity. It's a lot of grind that goes into it. And that's what makes me appreciate moments like today.
Yeah, you know, and I appreciate that. And we appreciate you. And I'm going to take you through a few moments in your life because I think it's going to lead us to today and what's happening today. And I think where we find Chris Paul in this space of social justice. Now, I know, and people of my generation know the relevance of the number 61 in your life. Not all the young people know that. Take a moment and take me through. Talk about your grandfather and what that meant to you, family, what that means to you and your life's journey.
Yeah, that number is really special to me. Always will be. And that's why, like, when I get a chance to come home and just spending all that time today on campus, I was telling some of the students, like, you just have to sort of be me to know it and understand why today was like one of the best days of my life. Because Winston-Salem is home, always will be. And as I was walking with the students and the band, like to see my grandmother and my grandfather, who I didn't know were going to be there, they were sort of parked to the side. And I just, I'm gone a lot, right? Like I've been in the NBA now for 15 years. I play 9-10 months out of the year. I don't get to come home as much as I would like to. So seeing my family is big for me, right? Especially my grandmother. And to see her today unexpectedly, like I knew I was going to go see her tomorrow or something, but to see her today meant so much to me. And for it to be like Winston-Salem State, like this is our home. Like I remember going to the games and being these long lines and standing in these lines to get French fries and being with my homies and pausing our game so that we could go watch the band and to know that today, like our family and everybody was there all, you know, for one common goal, you know, it meant a lot. And what I say about 61, dang, Mom, answer the phone. But 61, why it means so much is because to get to my grandfather's service station, every time I came from Louisville, I had to get off the exit right there and the school would be on the left and I'd make a right to go to my granddad's service station. And so it was actually a student today who told me they graduated high school the same year that I did and they graduated from Parkland High School. So for anybody out there who doesn't know, my senior year in high school, November 14th, I did my letter of intent. I signed my letter of intent to go to Wake Forest. my granddad, all my family, because they rolled deep. They came over to West Forsyth, my high school, to see the whole ceremony. That night, me and my granddad went to the Coliseum, to the LJVM, to watch Wake Forest play. The next day, I'm at our high school football game, and I get a phone call that my grandfather's been murdered, right? And so all this stuff is happening in Winston. You know what I mean? So I left my high school, rode over to Clemensville Road where my grandfather lived. And I mean, I was what, 17 at the time? Yeah, 17 years old. And it was a traumatic experience, something that I'll never forget. But I know without a shadow of a doubt that I'm not who I am today without the things that I endured at that age, right? At the age, I asked why. I was like, this is stupid, this is dumb, you know? And my family hugging me, you know, saying everything happens for a reason. You know, it's all in God's plan. But what's God's plan? Taking my grandfather. And, you know, it's always little moments like today that really makes me miss him, because I know how much he would have loved to see everybody together and the way like the young people are coming together. But I don't know. It's just, it's all these different experiences in life.
And then Chris, that became motivation for you. I mean, you go on and you dedicate to your grandfather. It reminds me of, you know that we won the CIAA championship this year, men's basketball.
Yes.
You know, coached by, you know, Cleo Hill. And yep. Cleo was so excited. But our star player, Robert Cologne, and during the championship game, his grandfather had passed. Yep. And didn't get a chance to see him play. And he had to make 3 free throws in order for us to win the game. And I remember looking at it. You can go and look on the film. And he makes the free throw. And he says, "That's for you, granddad." And I think, and it made me think of you when you were in high school and you scored the 61 points. Take us through that night.
Yeah, so I remember that when State won the CIAA this year and this past year. And I remember seeing that story. And sometimes, you know, you have these experiences, especially when you're in sport and there's something greater than yourself, right? Because the most points I scored in the game prior to that was 34, right? So I went into this game and I went crazy. Like I was making everything and my whole family was at the game. And so when I got to 59, I drove there like an in and out move and I shot a floater and I scored 61 and I got fouled. And so I think 68 was the state record, but that wasn't on my mind. So I went to the free throw line and I threw the ball out of bounds and I walked off the court. And I just remember falling into my dad's arms, who was assistant coach. And I mean, we keep everything like memorabilia and stuff like that. And you know, those questions people ask, like if your house caught on fire, what's the one thing you grab? What's the one thing you grab? You know, I mean, I got kids now, so I definitely grab my kids.
That's right.
The one thing that I would grab and is sitting right upstairs here in my parents' house is the basketball from that game. So I have the ball from that game when I scored 61 points, and it's in a case, right? It sort of looks like a trophy, but that's something that I'll always keep.
Yeah, I mean, and it's always a special memory for me as well. I mean, I followed you, man, in high school. I followed your collegiate career. Certainly, I follow you. You now, and so that's been pretty amazing. One of the nice things about being chancellor at a university, you get a chance to meet so many great people. I mean, to be in the space with you and to have this conversation with Chris Paul means a lot to me. But Chris, I want you to think about this though. And I've also, you know, had a chance to sit and talk, you know, with the great Earl Monroe. So for me, as a really strong basketball fan, to be able to sit and have a conversation with two of the greatest NBA players of all time, I wonder if you reflect on the fact that you and Earl Monroe, you know, in the same city, you know, you come here and now two of the greatest players of all time. Do you ever think about that at all?
You know, it's funny you say that because I'm like I love the history of the game, right? And even more than the history of the game, I love the history of home, right? Of home. So some years back, I got a chance to work on a project called Black Magic with Earl the Pearl, right? And I mean, I could tell you stories about when I got to the NBA and I went to the Legends brunch with my dad. And I remember, like, when I was a kid here, right, and my dad was in all these leagues, and he had two teams called, one was called the CJ Jocks, the other team was called the Chris Crushers. In one league, he wore number 44 because of Iceman. In the other league, he wore number 6 because of Dr. J. Think about me as a kid. I make it to the NBA, and I never forget the day that I got a chance to introduce my dad to Dr. J and Iceman, right? Right. To see my dad light up like a kid. So, like, when you talk about Earl the Pearl and these guys, man, I got a chance to do this project with Earl the Pearl, and I was sitting there, and, you know, he used to call him Black Jesus. You know?
Right, right.
And I started hearing these stories, too, of how the Winston-Salem State guys would play against Wake Forest guys late at night, you know what I mean, when nobody knew about it. Like, so to hear the history of it, and me today, I'm sorry, like, I get excited about this stuff, too.
Oh, yeah, no.
I was on campus today with some of the students, and they was pointing at a building, and they was like, you know, that over there is the C.E. Gaines Center, right? And so I said, do y'all know what C.E. Gaines stands for? And I'm not like old by no means if you ask me. And they was like, nah, we know it as the Gaines Center. I said, well, let me tell y'all something real quick.
That's right.
That's Clarence Big House Gaines. And I could pick you guys up and walk downstairs in my basement and show you a poster of Big House here in my basement here at the house, right? Because I was telling them that he's one of the winningest coaches ever, right? And a lot of times think people would hear that and be like, oh, at HBCUs, I said no for any school. You know, and for me growing up, Big House used to sit out at my granddad's service station, right? And so my church also was off of Delabrook, which was Dreaming Park Baptist Church. Coach Big House went to St. Paul right down the corner. And I used to, you know, some days be leaving church and I see Big House. Like that, he was a celebrity to me growing up. Like, huge. And anytime I saw Coach Big House Gaines, it was a big deal. And for him to come to some of my games when I was a kid meant a lot.
Yeah. I mean, so, I mean, special moments. I when I had a chance, when I first became chancellor at Winston-Salem State, I had breakfast with Earl Monroe. And I mean, you know, I think I was, you know, like your dad, you know, I was like in awe. I couldn't believe I was having breakfast with Earl Monroe. And what you find is that, you know, he's such a great human being. You know, he's a great person. And you know, just the way you are, Chris, I sent Stephen A. a text this morning. I said, I got Chris Paul's coming on my show. And he said, oh, great guest. And he's an even better person. That's what he texted me.
When I first got a chance to know Stephen A. or whatnot, anyone who knows me, that they know all they got to do is usually say two words and you got me engaged. All you got to do is say Winston-Salem. Yeah. Anytime somebody say something about that, if you tell me you went to Winston-Salem State or you've been to Winston-Salem, then that's a conversation starter. So Stephen A., you know, when I found out he went to Winston-Salem State, I was like, what? Like, because I don't care where I go, how far I travel or whatnot. It's something about the city. You know, it's something about Winston-Salem State that will always hold a huge place in my heart. And so,
So Chris, let's talk a little bit, and we're going to get into your work now, but let's talk a little bit about leadership. I mean, here you're in the NBA, and now you become president of the NBA Players Association. I mean, that's a big deal. So talk to me a little bit about leadership. What led you to be in this role and want to do this work?
Yeah, I was talking to some of the students about it today. So I've been president since 2013, but I joined the executive committee, I think, during my third year in the league or after my third year in the league. And the thing that sort of blows your mind, and as a kid, I got drafted to the NBA when I was 19, 20 years old. Excuse me. When you're a kid, and I tell you, when I was growing up here in Winston, I was in the backyard. I wasn't shooting fadeaways and acting like Michael Jordan so that I could learn about the Players Association.
Right.
I wasn't. You know what I mean? I wasn't like, man, I can't wait to get to the league and join the union. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know what that meant. That didn't even make sense to me. So my third year, when Billy Hunter, who was the executive director at the time, told me that I should join it. At the time, I was like, I don't got no time to do this. Right. Then once I got on the executive committee and started being a part of these conversations, I started to realize that, look, I'm 20 years old. The average career is 3 to 4 years, right? If I play for 4 years, I'm 24. That's a lot of life left. Like, I need to know more than just about how to shoot a jump shot. I need to understand the business of the game. And that's what it's been for me. I've had a business class on steroids the past, I don't know how many years, actually getting a chance to sit in a room with the different governors. We call them governors instead of owners of the teams. But to sit across from the table and to have real dialogue with them, right? When you talk about leadership, there's 450 players in our league. Everyone does not have the same interests, right? So you have to learn how to deal with guys, meet guys where they are. Where they are. You have to be accessible. My wife would probably say sometimes I'm too accessible. But it's just communicating, learning, right? I talk about this all the time, but I didn't know anything about financial literacy, right? It happens. I gave the students a story today. I think Ashley was in there and I was just telling them, like, I declared for the draft. I had like $151 in my bank account. It was right here in Winston. Declared for the draft. My agent them sent me $25,000. Like that, that day. No education, no nothing. I went to the bank on Stratford with my girlfriend, who is my wife now. And I just wanted to see what the statement looked like.
Right.
Well, I didn't got anything. I just wanted to see what the statement looked like. So I put my card in, hit the button, get the statement back. First thing I did, I went to Haynes Mall. Yeah. Went, got something, went to TGI Fridays. And, you know, thankfully, along the way, I've had people who have taught me. Right. Who have taught me. Because if that just gets out of hand and you don't have any financial literacy with it, then you have nothing to show for it. So I'm just constantly always trying to learn more and educate others who come behind me.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a great story. And I think it's great for folks to hear this story, Chris, because, you know, athletes that come after you certainly will be better prepared. There's been transformation, though, in leadership under your administration, Chris. You guys have changed the relationship between, you call them governors and players and so forth. You guys have changed that. It's a whole new model. It is classic 2020. And you guys have redesigned that. Can you talk a little bit about how that happened and the transformation that led to that? Because now the NBA is looked upon as being, people say they got it. They got it right.
You know, it's one of those things that sometimes you don't pay attention to when you're in it. You're sort of just doing the work, right? You're just doing the work. You're figuring this out, figuring that out. And one of the things about when I joined the executive committee, when I first came into the league, it wasn't very representative of our league, right? It was just a bunch of like great guys, but all of the guys were pretty much minimum guys. And then I was on my rookie deal and was about to probably sign a max contract. What I did as soon as I became president was, along with our executive committee and executive directors, we wanted the board to be more reflective of the entire league. That way, when we're making decisions, it's not just all about the max guys, or it's just all about the minimum guys or the mid-level guys. So now we got an unbelievable balance of guys around the league at different points in their careers, young guys, older guys, middle-of-the-road guys. And like I said, like just to hear you talk about it, I can remember the subtle changes when it was happening. And you just think about it. Our voices, we're the most recognizable guys in the world, right? Because we don't wear helmets. We don't, you know, everyone knows us, right? So our voices are very strong. And it's been amazing to see how our league continues to lead. I think that was the thing that maybe surprised me the most when we sort of took that pause while we were in the bubble, when everybody was like, oh, they're not playing. The amount of phone calls I was getting from the other leagues. It was a guy from Major League Baseball, from soccer, from the NFL. They were all calling us, asking us what we doing. You know, like we like big brother, like, hey, what y'all doing? What y'all doing? And we saying we doing this. And they're like, okay, all right, we'll all do it together.
Yeah, and when you reflect on that, Chris, I mean, it is about, at some point, you know, over the past 7 years under your administration, There was a time.
Under your administration. Like, I'm the listen.
Look, that's how we talk in higher education. You know, I
oh, man.
That's how we talk. But forget about that. But, you know, at some point, you know, there was a shift from looking at the power and the platforms that were in place for players to really elevate themselves and elevate their product and their brand. And that became a part of your or the Players Association's negotiation in terms of getting a better deal. It's like you realized that you had bargaining power. And that's important in negotiations.
You know what? It was very important in negotiation. And I think the other thing that was very important is communicating, right? And I give a lot of credit to Adam Silver, right? I think me and him have did an amazing job of developing our relationship, right? And making sure that we can call each other direct, no matter how big or small the issue is, and making sure that we can talk about it. And when you're a player in this league, there's a lot of things that occur sort of on a daily or sort of surface level that fans may not recognize, right? Like something as subtle as the color of your shoes, the sneakers that you play in, right? Like, I'm not sure if you guys know this, but there once upon a time was restrictions. Like, you could only wear shoes that were like mostly this color. Like 51% had to be this color or you would be fine.
Wow. Right?
The tights that guys wear under their shorts. And once upon a time, it could only be this color. Right. If you wore that color, you'd be fine. Kinesio tape, the stuff that you see guys like tape and stuff like that now. I remember when that incident occurred some years ago with Derrick Rose, and I made a phone call and I was like, hey, now, come on, let's not control too much if this isn't affecting the game. So there are real conversations that have to be had. And I think myself and Adam over the years, we've developed that relationship along with Michelle Roberts. And like, look, we got to be able to talk about this. And the last thing I tell you is when we did the last CBA negotiations, because when I was younger and I was just on the executive committee, I sat in a 17-hour meeting, right? We were in New York at the Waldorf or whatnot, and we had the union and the league had its governors or whatnot, and we would be in our own rooms, and then we'd be strategizing, and then we'd come to this big room, and we all, like, talk, and then we'd go back. But it was a bunch of posturing. We wasn't trying to get nowhere. I don't feel like we was trying to get nowhere. We were there for 17 hours. And I never forget when we were going to start doing the last CBA negotiations, I actually sent warm-up suits to all the different governors. Because I'm so used to going to these meetings and everybody got ties on, whatnot. I said, look, everybody wear a warm-up suit, come in here comfortable, and let's get something done. You know what I mean? Because y'all know, like, yeah, a lot of times it's about a dress code and what you... Forget what we got on. Let's come in here. Let's get to work and get some stuff done. So,
yeah. Interesting. One last question about that. How do players see you as president of the association?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know. You're going to have to ask them. And I, and I say this because the thing is, too, I'm a player, right? Like, I'm a current player. So there are a number of guys in the league who don't like me. And rightfully so. Some of them I don't necessarily like either. And I understand my job, though, precedes that or whatnot. But I think it is a really good feeling for me, though, at times to develop relationships sometimes with guys that I may not have known, right? And this job has sort of forced me to have a relationship with some guys or guys, you know, just reach out and they got questions and they want to talk about it. So, I don't know the answer to that, but it was a great feeling after the bubble to get some texts and some calls from guys who just, you know, said, man, like, really appreciate it. Because we don't do it for that, but it's nice to know that, you know, guys are paying attention.
Agreed. I'm going to take you back to another moment. 2016 ESPY Awards. You take a stand on race and gun violence. Take us through that moment, what led up to it, because for most of us in America, and it sounds like for most of the people even there with you, it was somewhat of a surprise. So take us through that moment.
Yeah, just to give you a little bit of like groundwork for how it all became, because everybody sees the ESPYs, And this is what's important to talk about. And that's why I kept talking to a lot of students today about the importance of those group chats and those little small communities that they are. So me, Melo, Braun, and D-Wade, everybody calls Banana Boat Crew or whatnot, the Brotherhood. We got a group chat, which is fun and vibrant, laughing, just like everybody else's at times with funny memes and stuff like that. But we also talk about real things, right? About being fathers and what it's like growing up as Black men in America. And it started with Melo. Melo put something in the chat and was like, fellas, how y'all feel about this? We all got on the phone. We started talking like, man, you know, are you going to the ESPYs? You going to the ESPYs? Well, I go if you go. You go, you know, such. And it goes back to understanding your power and your voice. You know, we let the ESPYs know at the time and they were unbelievable. ESPN worked amazing with us. But we was like, look, we all going to come. But we would like to do this. We would like to do this. And so we started out that ESPYs with basically a call to action. Call to action. And what we also did, just wanted to let everybody know that it's okay. It's okay to say how you feel, right? Especially on this stage in front of all of our other fellow athletes, right? To let them know that, look, we'll start it off in this, you know, so we'll sort of start it off for you guys. And now I think a lot of people are a lot more comfortable expressing themselves now because of
it. Yeah, and we appreciate that. I mean, great work. The NBA has certainly put itself out there. And Chris, in that moment, I mean, since that time, it really has propelled you, I think, on a quest or in a position to be in a social justice kind of platform. You use that platform quite a bit. I want to move you down to Orlando now. So you're down in Orlando, you're in the bubble, and George Floyd happens. How close did the league come to not playing at all?
As close as you can get. As close as you can get. And a lot of that was, guys were just tired, right? And at the end of the day, you had people chiming in on both sides, like, y'all need to play, y'all don't need to play. And then it put guys in sort of like a weird gray area. They're like, man, should we play because, you know, fans want to see us play or whatnot, or so we can make sure we're taking care of our families, or should we not play because that's going to take the attention off of the social justice, right? So there was this battle. It wasn't easy for any of us. And we just kept talking and communicating about it. And what we ultimately decided is that, you know, for the greater good of the league, right, for all the full body of players or whatnot, we voted, took a vote, and guys said they wanted to play. So once we decided that we wanted to play, it's like, okay, we're going to play, but we want to go down here and play and make sure that we take full advantage of this platform. Full advantage of this platform. And that's where the brainstorming started coming in. And we were like, okay, we want to put messages on our jerseys. Okay, we want to try to champion small African-American-owned businesses. We want to make sure that people understand the importance of voting, right? And I think what it does, especially from a professional athlete standpoint, is if you're not educated on the subject, it forces you to. Yeah. It forces you to, whether you want to or not. Like, I think that's what it did for me. It made me do more research and made sure that I had to have these conversations. I had some unbelievable conversations with Killer Mike, with Angela Rye, with all these different people who I'm fortunate enough that I could call on to educate me, because I didn't know enough. I still don't know enough. But I think it's a great time in history where we're all starting to educate each other.
Look, I agree. And I applaud you for that particular work. Is it true that President Barack Obama called you guys and had some conversations? I've heard that.
I'm very fortunate, and I don't say it all the time, to have him like as a mentor, right? I'm actually on Michelle Obama's When We All Vote team, and was actually on the President's Council for Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition while he was in office. But he's been an unbelievable mentor for me since I met him, right? So more than just that situation that happened, whether it be life, whether it was me going from LA to Houston, he's always been an unbelievable sounding board for me personally. So, yeah.
Yeah, so that was important. So now take us through the notion of the NBA, where it is, the social justice movement. WNBA has been in that space as well. How have you guys been received, and what is, can you talk about the evolution of the platform? Where are we going with this?
Yeah, I think the evolution of the platform, you can't understand where you're going unless you realize where you came from, right? So everything is happening now. Even Colin Kaepernick, the sacrifices that he made for us to be comfortable, you know, expressing ourselves the way that we do. But we also got to look back to the Cleveland Summit, right? With Jim Brown and Muhammad Ali and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and these guys, you know, that was this originally, right? It's just that now we have a lot more athletes and a lot more people speaking up. And it's not just Black people that are speaking up, you know, is white people, is all types of people who are speaking up on these different social injustices. And the WNBA has been amazing, right? And those are our sisters, right? And we try to do as much as we can collectively. And I'm sure you heard me probably say this before, but the reason we do what we do is because after a game, we don't leave the arena with our uniforms on, right? I never got in the car after the game in my OKC jersey and drive home. I put my clothes on and I drive home as a Black man. And so when people say, why are you guys, you know, speaking on this and speaking on that? Because it's 48 minutes in a game. That's the only time that I'm, you know, this athlete, NBA player. For the rest of the time, you know, I'm a father. I'm a Black man out here. So I have to live life as such.
Yeah. And you guys have put a number of things in motion with the NBA. You talked about setting up, you know, voting centers and using coliseums for voting sites and things of that nature. What other things have you put in place or tried to encourage among the athletes around voting and social justice, et cetera?
Yeah, so with our league, we started a social justice coalition, right? And that's what we did with the pause and the reset and the bubble. And we just realized we were playing games every other day, and then the Jacob Blake situation happened, but we didn't have an opportunity to process it, right? And just to speak on Jacob Blake for a second, his father, I remember when I talked to his dad for the first time because he was going to address the guys before we had our big meeting. And I'll never forget it because when the FaceTime rung and I was about to talk to Jacob Blake Sr., and this just ties us back to Winston-Salem, before I could say anything, he spoke to me and said, I just want you to know that I knew your grandfather. Because of his ties to Winston-Salem. Because Jacob Blake had spent time in Winston-Salem. So, yeah, that hit me right away. You know what I mean? Just how small this world is and how that was a turning point, I think, in our league, right? I think years from now, 10 years, 20 years from now, everyone who plays in the league will look back to that sort of reset that we took within the bubble. And it just made us sort of analyze everything, you know, made us refocus and wanted us to get these different initiatives going. And it brought us back to the table with the governors. And we told them, we said, look, we understand you guys' influence, right? On elections or whatever it is, local government, everything, because you guys generate a lot of revenue. And so that's when we told them about the polling sites. We want to make sure every team uses their practice facility or their arena as a polling site. And just that little movement there, we went from less than 20% of players who were registered or voted in the last two elections to over 95% are registered now for this election.
Oh my goodness, man, that's fantastic. That's great. Chris, take us through some of the things that you're doing now. I know you have this social fund, social change fund, you're doing some other things. Man, tell me a little bit about your platform right now.
Oh, right now, I feel like we always got something going on. I'm taking two classes right now at SU. We started a social change fund actually during the pandemic. And it goes back again to you know, our friendship and our brotherhood. So me, Melo, and D-Wade, while we all have our own respective foundations and we do a lot of great work, we finally realized that, and this is dumb because we've been playing for so long and we've been talking about doing things together, right? That's the big thing, right? Do things together, because one thing in the Black community or whatnot, we always want to be like Mr. Me Too, right? Somebody will do something and they'll be like, oh, that's dope. I can do that better, right? And instead of partnering together and building, we just reinvent the wheel, do something different. So we were like, look, let's align. Let's, you know, you can go fast alone, but you can go further together. So all of me, Melo, and D-Wade came together with our social change fund. And we put money in and we said we want to make an impact on prison reform, education, social justice, all these different issues. But it's not just limited to us three. You know, we're open to any and everyone who wants to join, right? So Donovan Mitchell, I could run off, CJ McCollum, Candace Parker, Michael Strahan, all these guys are getting involved and we're just going to continue to build.
Yeah, I mean, and it's great. And you're doing, you know, great work. You mentioned that you're taking two courses at Winston-Salem State University. You know, you see how I had to say that, Chris. Winston-Salem State University, we're glad to have you as a Ram, a student. Everybody's excited. You know, social media blew up when they found out about it. And so we were glad to make that announcement. What are your ultimate plans? Why Winston-Salem State University? And you also, and we appreciate the fact that you have been shining a very positive light on HBCUs, and that's much needed.
You know, I'll tell you first why Winston-Salem State is, because Winston-Salem State will always be part of my DNA, like in who I am. I got a number of family members that then went to Winston-Salem State. I just found out a couple months ago that my dad actually went to Winston-Salem State. He went for a semester. We won't talk about that. it's just always will be home for me. Like my AAU team, when I was 15, 16 years old, we practiced over at Winston-Salem State every day. I was at the football games as a kid. And to champion HBCUs the way that I do, it was only one choice for which one that I would want to go to and attend, right? Because my ultimate goal is to graduate, right? And it's not for anybody else but for me, right? And when I thought about graduating, I was like, what better way to do it than at Winston-Salem State? You know, I started off at Wake Forest and to finish at Winston-Salem State. Both two schools have played an integral part in my life, and both in Winston-Salem. You know, so, and I think the thing with HBCUs is, as a young kid growing up, Winston-Salem State was just Winston-Salem State, right? I wasn't educated on why Winston-Salem State was there. And I told somebody recently, I don't even think Winston-Salem State recruited me, right? But that's because at that time, right, at that time when I was coming out, that wasn't part of the blueprint to get to the NBA.
Right.
And so now that I'm so much more educated, and when I champion these different schools and universities, it's not just about wearing the paraphernalia. I look it up. I do research on why this school even came about to begin with. And when you start digging into it and really learning the history of these schools, why not?
Yeah. And then Chris, you know, you're down in the bubble, you got the HBCU tour. You're wearing, you know, the sneakers, different sneakers each night. You got some people are excited and some people are mad with you. I was on a call the other day and said, how can I get Chris Paul to wear my sneakers? So tell us about that and how that came about.
If you seen how many texts or calls I got about somebody saying, why you ain't wearing this school yet? I'd be like, listen, man, it's over 100 HBCUs. I ain't have about 12 or 15 games in the bubble. So, it's been so cool, though. And I say this because I don't want to say people were scared or nothing like that. They just might not have sort of screamed it as loud as they should have been screaming it, right? So when I was in the bubble, it would be different people that worked for the NBA or whatnot. And I remember it was a guy who had the camera just about every day when I would go to the game. And he didn't really say nothing. He didn't really say nothing no days. And then one day he just put the camera to the side and he was like, Chris, he was like, I went to Virginia Union. You know what I mean? I was like, man, that's what's up. And then he ended up giving me some Virginia Union gear. You know what I mean? So I think it's this newfound sort of family, right? of all these people who realized, like, the HBCU you went to shouldn't be a secret. You know what I mean? Talk about it. Tell about it. Tell about your experience. And that's why today was so dope, because today was sort of that experience that I knew I sort of always missed out on.
Right.
But it was cool to be a part of.
No, we appreciate that. I mean, and now let's move to today. I mean, you came and you came to Winston-Salem State University. You led a march to the polls. Talk about that, why that's important. And a little bit, you kind of had bits and pieces about why the day was important. But let's talk about the day in the last segment.
Yeah, the day was important, obviously, for voting, right? And to see the power of the youth and them understanding. And some of them don't fully understand how important it is that they're voting already, right? Because this stuff is sort of generational. You know, these kids that were out here today, if they, you know, this becomes their normal to vote, then guess what? They're kids. It's going to be normal for them to vote. So it's a huge impact. And I think aside from just the voting initiative for me, I sort of lost myself in today. I could have stayed out there all day, you know, and it's crazy because you, yeah, man, I forgot about COVID, all this different type of stuff. I think for me, it's just that I don't get a chance to be home as much as I would like, right? So to not only to be home, but to have some of my family there and to see everybody out here for this great initiative. And I mean, I love the band, you know what I mean? Like I've always loved bands and everything about it. And just looking around and seeing all the people and seeing how happy everybody was to be doing something together. Like I said, I'll never forget today.
Yeah, and one of the things I'll share with you, because I think is important, I received the data from the number of students in the HBCU community, what percentage of those students at the various campuses had voted. And I can tell you that Winston-Salem State University had the highest percentage of students who had voted already. That was before today.
And that was,
I think they
kept saying that to me. I was like, y'all gonna go vote? They was like, I voted already. What you talking about? So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that was fantastic in terms of that. So, and as we look at you, and we're going to get you out of here, we've just got a few more minutes. If you look at where you are today, Chris, and you've done some amazing things, what's next for you? Have you mapped out? Have you thought about that?
I don't know. I don't think about it too much. I'm about to start getting ready for next season.
Yep.
I think one of the biggest things is understanding how time is the most valuable thing that we have, right? And so trying to make sure I spend that time with the right people. You know what I mean? Make sure I enjoy my family. I think when you get so busy and so much time continues to go by, it can get away from you.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happens at times every time I come home. You know, when I see some of my family members like getting older or whatever. And so just I think the next thing is to continue to grind and work, but make sure I can spend as much time with the people that matter.
Yeah. Do you see yourself as a coach?
Man, you know, it's funny. I would coach, but the amount of traveling that go with coaching, it'd be just like playing. I think for me, eventually I would love to be a governor. I would love to have a team. I would love to have a team. And that way I can be a part of the entire business of it. And I can sort of be there at the games when I want to be there. But if my kids got something, I can be there for them. Because I grew up and I was never the kid who had to look at the door to see if my parents was going to make it. And, you know, unfortunately, I mean, it is my job or whatnot, but still, my kids are pretty used to me not being there, right? And that's something that I don't necessarily love.
Yeah. Well, Chris, and I want to thank you for taking time. You were generous enough to come on the show. We thank you for the work that you did today on the campus of Winston-Salem State University. The students really enjoyed it. All of us enjoyed it, the administration and everyone. So thank you. We're glad to have you as a student at Winston-Salem State University. I wish you well. And I look forward, man. I look forward to handing you your degree. That's what I'm looking forward to. We got to make that happen.
I'm going to walk across that stage. You better believe it.
We got you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Everybody, Chris Paul in the house tonight. We thank you for joining us. And we want to tell you to join us next week for another edition of Future Focus Now.